Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So, I was asked about 15 minutes ago to give class, and I was told it was verse 53. Now I'm finding out it's verse 55, so anything could happen. Kalas tu hetu sukha dukayos chet. Kalas tu hetu sukha dukayos chet. Kalas tu hetu sukha dukayos chet. Kim atmanas tatra tad atmako aso. Kim atmanas tatra tad atmako so. Kim atmanas tatra tad atmako so. Kalastu hetu sukha dukkha yoschet. Kim atmanas tatra tad atmako so. Nagne hi tapo. That's actually tapo, not tapi. Na himasya tat syat. Nagne hi tapo na himasya tat syat. Nagnehi tapo nahi masya tatsyat. Krudhyeta kasmai na parasya dvandvam. Krudhyeta kasmai na parasya dvandvam. Krudhyeta kasmai na parasya dvandvam. Nehi tapo nahi masya natatsyat. Krudhyeta kasmaina parasya tvandvam. Kalastu hetu sukha dukkha yoschet. Kim atmanas tatra taratmako so. Nagnehi tapo nahi masya tatsyat. Krudhyeta kasmaina parasya dvandvam. Kalastu hetu sukha dukkha yoschet. Kim atmanas tatra taratmako so. Nagnehi tapo hi na. Nagnehi tapo nahi masya tatsyat. Krudhyeta kasmaina parasya tvandvam. Kalastu hetu sukha dukkha yoschet. Kim atmanas tatra taratmako so. Nagnehi tapo nahi masya tatsyat. Krudhyeta kasmaina parasya dvandvam. Kala time tu bat hetu the cause sukha dukhayo of happiness and distress chet if kim what atmana for the soul tatra in that idea tad atmaka based on time aso the soul na not Agne,
Agne,
from fire.
Shi,
indeed.
Tapa,
burning.
Burning.
Na,
not.
Himasya, of snow.
Tat,
that. Syat, becomes. Kridyeta,
should become angry.
Kasmai, at whom?
Na,
there is not.
Parasya,
for the transcendental soul.
Dvam
dvam,
duality.
Translation. If we accept time as the cause of happiness and distress, that experience still cannot apply to the spirit soul, since time is a manifestation of the Lord's spiritual potency, and the living entities are also expansions of the Lord's spiritual manifestation through time. Certainly, a fire does not burn its own flames or sparks, nor does the cold harm its own snowflakes or hail. In fact, the spirit soul is transcendental and beyond the experience of material happiness and distress. At whom, therefore, should one become angry? Responsively, please. If we accept time as the cause of happiness and distress, that experience still cannot apply to the spirit soul. Since time is a manifestation of the Lord's spiritual potency. And the living entities are also expansions of the Lord's spiritual manifesting through time. And are also expansions of the Lord's spiritual potency manifesting through time. Certainly, a fire does not burn its own flames or sparks. Nor does the cold harm its own snowflakes or hail. In fact, the spirit soul is transcendental. And beyond the experience of material happiness and distress. At whom, therefore, should one become angry? So, a very interesting story here about the Avanti Brahmana, the song of the Avanti Brahmana. And we can understand that the Avanti Brahmana was actually a very, very fortunate personality. Because he actually understood his position. We see in the beginning of this chapter how he was very much immersed in a very miserly person. He's actually the opposite of a Brahmana. And what is the opposite of a Brahmana? Kripana. Yeah, miserly person. And it's interesting, in a lecture Prabhupada was talking about, he gave an interesting definition of a Kripana. And he said, a Kripana is a person who they felt, if my passing air could benefit you, then I'll hold it in. So he was a very, very miser. They wouldn't give you anything that would benefit you. Everything is there for their own benefit. And this is what he was like. He was very, very miserly. But somehow or other, he became very fortunate. And it said, Brahmanda Brahmani Kona Bhagavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasad Kripa Poya Bhakti Lata Bij. That, you know, a fortunate person is Bhagavan Jeev, one who's very fortunate. Even though he's wandering throughout the universe, up and down through all the different, you know, planets within the universe. One who's very fortunate is his Guru Krishna Prasad Kripa Poi Bhakila. He actually gets, by the mercy of Krishna, he gets spiritual master. And by the mercy of the spiritual master, one understands Krishna. So this was also, even though it's not discussed here, as I recall, in this section, it's not discussed how he received this knowledge, but we can understand that he must have come into contact with someone at some point who triggered this realization for him. Because it doesn't actually, you know, the living entity cannot, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam also that mentions that, Matiya Krishna Parato Svatova Mitobi Padetya Griha Pratanam. that not by their own endeavours, by the endeavour of, by combination of both, can materialistic persons understand Krishna. Matiya Krishna, they'll never know Krishna. So there actually has to be someone, as it points out in the 11th canto, who's in factual knowledge of the absolute truth, and he can impart this knowledge unto them. This point's made quite clear in the Bhagavatam and the various scriptures. So we can understand at some point, due to his fortune, he came into contact with a self-realized person who was able to pass the knowledge to him. And if we go back a little bit into the end of the previous chapter, we see how this story is developed. How in the last three or four verses there, Krishna's pointing out to Uddhava the perilous position of someone who's trying to enjoy sense gratification. And this is the same thing in the Matiya and the Krishna Paratos. Someone who's actually trying to understand Krishna, they'll never know Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj points this, and he's Nahate Vidu Swatakatim Vishnun. Durashaya ye bahi maatama. They take bad shelter. Because why? The goal is to enjoy sense gratification. They're seeing sense gratification as the goal of life, as the ultimate purpose of life. Therefore, Nahate Vidu. They do not know Swatakatim Vishnu, that the supreme goal of life is Vishnu. They're thinking the goal of their life is to expand their material influence, to get more money, to enjoy their senses, etc. They're thinking that this is the goal. And therefore they become bewildered. And this is the same point that Krishna is making here to Uddhava. You'll read in the end of the previous chapter. That because sense gratification is the goal of their life, they become completely bewildered. And then he points out, he says to Uddhava, don't try to enjoy sense gratification. And try to understand how illusion based on material dualities prevents someone from self-realization. So if someone's caught up in this bodily concept of life, if someone's caught up in this world of duality, and that's what's being mentioned here, this dvandvam, and how this personality is beyond, someone who's actually realized will be beyond illusion, then they can actually see things as they are. And this is, again, it's pointed out in the Bhagavad Gita, how one who's actually beyond the duality of illusion sees things as they are. Understands they're not this body. Understand that we're separate from this material world. As it points out, Prabhupada quotes from Asango hi ayam purusha, a Vedic aphorism, he says, that the living entity, is... he's transcendental to this material situation, Sangha. He cannot come into contact with it because he's transcendental. And this material world is material. The energies are completely different. Yet because of the Jiva's Tatastha position, this marginal position hovering in between the two, he can be affected or covered over by these different things. And in that state, the living entity thinks that I am this body. Living entity thinks that I am a cat, I am dog, I am man, I am woman, whatever it is, whatever the upadi that is there, this illusion, whatever this false identification that comes, the living entity completely identifies with it and therefore acts in such a way. And we see, it's so common, we see in this world how people act based on this illusory bodily concept of life. Everyone's doing it. It's not just like one or two. It's a rare thing. We see that everyone is acting in this world based on this false bodily concept of life. Therefore, nāte vidu, they can't understand. It's not possible for them to understand. Matīne Krishne paratosvatovāmito vipitete grihāvatānam. They can't understand. Even if they make endeavours, so they make big endeavours. You see the yoga clubs and they follow various different so-called religious societies. And they're all completely bewildered. They've got no idea what's going on. They've got no idea of their identification. They've got no idea of the process to escape. Even if they had an understanding, oh, I'm not this body, they've got no idea of the process of how to escape from that, because their goal of life is sense gratification. So they become bewildered. Maya prakriti jnana, their knowledge is stolen by illusion. So Krishna points this out to Uddhava. And then he says, even though, and then he talks about the nature of a transcendentalist, which, if we look at the previous verses in this chapter, and see the various things that happen to the Avanti Brahmana, how he's travelling around the world as a sannyasi, and people are spitting on him, urinating, stealing his dunda, stealing his clothes, abusing him, saying all unpleasant things about him, beating him, tying him up in chains, treating him like a household dog. Actually, I saw a news thing the other day where might have even been here in Australia, how someone had locked up their kids for so many, actually locked up this young man for he was 23 years old, and they locked him up for a few years and were abusing him, and he was locked up in chains and stuff. So I mean, this stuff happens, you know. And of course this person, because it would seem that he's, you know, very much in the bodily concept of life, seizes a position of great suffering. And, you know, in the newspaper they're portraying this as a position of great suffering, and how the people are very cruel and this thing and that thing. Yet for someone who's a transcendentalist, they'll see that actually these things are coming about by my past activities. And this is the point that the Avanti Brahmana is making here in this series of verses, where he's talking about, you know, what happens in the material world is that something happens to us to cause us distress, and the general response is we blame someone else for that. But he's making the point here that we can actually see that this is all coming about due to my identification with the body. That's really all it is. And Krishna, he makes this same point. He says, matva svasat kunteya sitoshna sukhutukuda agamabhiyanya payiro nitastam titikshasa bharata. He says, the non-permanent appearance of, excuse me, of happiness and distress, and their disappearance in due course of time, are just like the comings and goings of the summer and winter seasons. Just like, you know, here I am in Melbourne, and for me this is really cold. You know, but you know, I've been meeting people since I've been here that are walking around in t-shirts and thinking, this is great weather. I mean, it's horrible weather here. You know, it's just like so cold for me. I've got practically all the clothes I've got I'm wearing right now, you know. But that's sensory perception. For some people we can see this is nice weather, but for other people it's not. For some people they might find this is even very hot. You know, if someone was living down in Antarctica or something, or maybe from Tasmania, they think this is very hot, very difficult. So it's sensory perception. So he says, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course of time are just like the changing of the summer and winter seasons. They arise from sensory perception. And one must, this is tongues that tikshasha bharata, one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So the Avanti Brahmana is making the same point here. It's like, you know, he I think for the previous five verses he's saying, these other people, if you think these are the cause of my happiness and stress, other people, that's got nothing to do with the soul, that's all external. Therefore, you know, you're talking about the body, so that's not why you're suffering. And then he talks about time factor, the demigods, so many different things he causes, and then ultimately he's saying that actually it comes from the mind. So then Krishna says in this 58 and 9, he says, even though neglected, insulted, ridiculed or envied by bad men, or even though repeatedly agitated by being beaten, tied up or deprived of one's occupation, spat upon or polluted with urine by ignorant people. You know, so, can imagine someone urinating on you? How would you feel about that? Would you be, oh, that's okay, that's just my past karma, that's just, you know, the external bodies reacting. I think most of us would become quite upset and maybe even abusive, or yell at the person and try to push them away or whatever, you know. Or polluted with urine by ignorant people. One who desires the highest goal in life should, in spite of all these difficulties, use his intelligence to keep himself safe on the spiritual platform. So the point that Krishna is making here is it doesn't matter what the material world presents to us, we need to learn to tolerate that. And that's the same point he makes to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, tangs titikshasha bharata. We must learn to tolerate the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress without being disturbed. And the situation of persons who identify with the material body is that as soon as some reverse or unpleasant thing happens, we become disturbed. We don't tolerate it. So that helps us to understand where our consciousness is at. If we're disturbed by these external things, it means that we're on the bodily platform. The transcendentalist is not. As described, how a transcendentalist is just like the great ocean, which is very, very peaceful, even though so many rivers are flowing into the ocean. It doesn't become disturbed. It doesn't overflow its banks. And we see sometimes people have, they call them meltdowns and things like that. You know, it's like so many, too many things happening, and they just have these emotional eruptions, which are sometimes like volcanoes, and they're yelling and they're shouting and they're doing all sorts of crazy things, you know, because their emotions are out of control. And we see as Kali Yuga progresses, people's emotions are more and more out of control. Just like, I didn't manage to come to the morning program because I got back late from, I went to a funeral yesterday. Someone in my wife's family, a very dear friend, had, you know, someone who had a lot of influence in her upbringing, had left their body. We found out about it last Thursday. So we went to the funeral yesterday. And it was really interesting for me to observe the way that certain members of her family responded to it. And some of the older members, who sort of come from what we would determine as older world sort of people, were very dignified about it, and there was not much demonstration of emotion. They kept their emotions under control. And I remember, you know, like, you know, that was the way that, you know, my grandparents, etc., would deal with things. They would, you know, deal with their emotions in a private way, not, you know. But these days, it's like people are very much into showing their emotions and demonstrating and crying and yelling and shouting and all this stuff. But it's actually, according to Vedic culture, this is not particularly evolved. This is a very, very, you know, lesser way of expressing. But someone needs to learn how to tolerate all these things. So it's kind of interesting to see how people do things. Then Uddhava, he asks Krishna, please explain to me so I properly understand it, because he's saying, I want to become like that, you know. And then in the beginning of the next chapter, which is also very interesting, Krishna mentions, it's quite interesting. He's saying here, O disciple of Brihaspati, there is virtually no saintly man in this world who is capable of resettling his own mind after it has been disturbed by the insulting words of uncivilized men. And then he goes, sharp arrows, this is a very interesting verse, one of the devotees of Govardhan quotes this all the time, sharp arrows which pierce one's chest and reach the heart do not cause as much suffering as the arrows of harsh, insulting words that become lodged within the heart when spoken by uncivilized men. So we see in this day and age there are so many uncivilized people. In Australia, you know, people are very quick to swear at you, call you names, all types of different things. And it's quite piercing. Yet we see there are examples of great personalities such as Sukadev Goswami, Rishabhdev, and now we're reading the Avanti Brahmana, who were insulted in so many different ways by different foolish people, low-class people. And yet, they tolerated it. And Krishna's making a point to Arjuna. He says, tongues of tikshasa bharata. You have to learn to tolerate these things without being disturbed. And the reason is we're actually training ourselves up. We're training our intelligence and ultimately the self into learning how to tolerate all these different difficulties. Because we see, just like, you know, I was mentioning, I went to a funeral yesterday. So the person who had left their body, they had some kind of blood disorder, and they were going through, you know, various treatments and this thing and that thing. And after some time, it got to the point where it was just all too much for them. So the point being is that, you know, death is there for all of us. I was listening to an interesting conversation the other day, Prabhupada. And someone was saying to Prabhupada, he says, but Swamiji, why is the death rate so high in India? And Prabhupada, in his typical one line, he says, no, the death rate is the same everywhere, 100%. Yeah. So we, you know, it's an amazing sense of humor Prabhupada has. So the point being is that we're all faced with that. We're all going to die. And how you deal with that will determine your next body. It says that, antavantare me deha nitya shakti, antakale chamam evam smaram muktvakale evam smaram. This remembrance at the point of death, that's where you're going in your next life. So what are we going to remember at the point of death? Are we going to be beset by so many fears and concerns and anxieties? Are we not going to respond properly or appropriately to the pushings that the body is forcing upon us at the moment of death, you know, pain and so many different things that are going to come? Are we going to remember Krishna? Are we going to remember all the horrible things that have happened throughout our life, all the things that people have done to us? Are we going to remember our family members, our dog, our cat, our goldfish? What are we going to remember? That's the whole point of this practice of devotional service, is to try to habituate ourselves to remembering Krishna. So at the point of death, we can come to this state of remembering Krishna. And that, as Krishna explains, you know, whatever state of being one attains at the end of this life, that state they attain in the next body without fail. So that's the goal of Krishna consciousness, is to through the practice of sadhana, vaidhi sadhana bhakti, through this practice, is to become so habituated to remembering Krishna that even when the most difficult time comes upon us, which is not very far away, we shouldn't think that, oh, that's a long way away. We shouldn't think that it's, you know, oh, maybe that's 10, 20, 30, 40 years, whatever it is away. Don't think like that. That's the material nature is tricking you into believing, you know, just slipping into what we call a comfort zone. No problems, I don't have to worry about this right now. Prabhupada often would talk about Maharaj Parikshit. He was very fortunate because he knew he had 7 days. And Prabhupada would always say, you don't know if you've got 7 minutes. You don't. I mean, does any of us know when we're going to leave our body? We don't know. You know, we could all be sitting here enjoying hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, and a plane's flying over and the engine drops off and falls through the roof. All dead. These things happen all the time. Just look at the newspaper every single day. These things happen. Some crazy guy could burst in through the door with a machine gun and splatter us all over the walls. These things happen all the time. Don't become comfortable in this material world, because this material world is not our place. The spiritual world is our place. But in order to go back to the spiritual world, we need to prepare ourselves. We need to become qualified. You can't, you know, it's like, I remember when I was young, we used to go to parties, and sometimes we'd do what they call gate crashing. It means we're uninvited, and you go to a party uninvited. You can't do that in the spiritual realm. You can't gate crash. You have to become qualified. And the process, the means to become qualification, or the qualification is that, one is we have no material desire, especially sex desire. We have to give up that. And then we become completely absorbed in Krishna. 100%. You have to become purified and absorbed in thoughts and service of Krishna. That's the qualification. And who of us there has achieved, who of us here has achieved that? I can tell you certainly that I have not. So if I was to die now, I don't know what my destination is. Because I'm not serious enough about the process of devotional service. So we can see, you know, there's so much information is given there in the scriptures about how to become purified and how to become qualified to return back to Godhead. And this story is very demonstrative of that, because it's talking about how this Brahmana from Avantipur, he was a very miserly person. He was, even his family didn't like him. He was so miserly. And then at one point he had a realization. At one point something triggered it for him. Something, you know, the light went on and he realized, oh, this is bad. I shouldn't be like this. I've got to change what I'm doing. And then he renounced all these things, and he started to travel. And he wasn't a preacher so much. He was more of a bhajananandi. He was more absorbed in internal. He didn't speak to anyone, even though they would provoke him and stuff like that. And his realization developed more and more. So for him, he was very fortunate, as I was mentioning before. He actually understood what was his position in this material world. And the same is for us, you know, is we need to understand, who am I? And it's very interesting that with Sanatana Goswami. Practically speaking, the very first thing he said to Lord Chaitanya was, Kayami. Who am I? And then he said, Tapatraya, I can't remember the whole verse, he said, why am I suffering the burning threefold miseries? An intelligent person. He was a very, very, actually, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami were very, very intelligent persons. They came from a very distinguished Saraswat Brahmin family. But they were engaged in the service of Muslims. Therefore, according to the culture of that particular time, they had become contaminated and untouchable by, you know, in reference to Brahminical culture. Of course, you know, Vaishnavas don't accept it like that, but at that time, it was very much a smarter kind of a culture where it was heavily governed by rules and regulations. So because Rupa and Sanatan, who were known as Dabir Khas and Sakara Malik, were engaged in the service of the Nawab Hussein Shah, they considered they were untouchable. So they'd even taken on Muslim names. Yet, due to good fortune, also due to obviously the association of Lord Chaitanya, Sanatana Goswami, when he first approached the Lord, he said, well, you know, people that, because before that he had been, you know, when he had realized that, you know, this, he was in a bad situation and that, you know, he was starting to study the Bhagavatam, he was actually when he had heard of Lord Chaitanya, he actually hadn't met him when he heard of Lord Chaitanya, and he was following the devotional path. And he was, instead of going to his service as the prime minister of the country, he would be at home all day studying the Bhagavatam. And he became quite learned in the Bhagavatam. And so when he presented to Lord Chaitanya, he was saying, you know, people say that I'm a learned man because, you know, he was studying the Bhagavatam, he knew so many languages, Sanskrit, Persian, etc., etc. He was a very, very learned person. Yet, he was saying, people say I'm very learned, but actually I don't even understand who I am. And he was, you know, the very, very basis of spiritual understanding is to understand the nature of the self. And we see that in this material world, is that so many, practically everyone, is convinced that the self is the body. As Narad Muni, he coins this term upadi. They have these false designations, and this false designation is based on this all these different false designations we have are based on this one avidya, or this ignorance about thinking that I'm the body. And Sanatana Goswami, he brought up this point, he's saying, but actually we don't understand the very nature of the self. And it's just like in mathematics or any of these sciences, if we have a basic misunderstanding, then all our calculations based on that misunderstanding will also be incorrect. If we're doing mathematics and we think that 1 plus 1 is equal to 3 and 2 plus 2 is equal to 5, etc. like that, so everything we do, you know, based on that, is going to be incorrect. So, you know, all these assessments, all these responses that we have in this material world, based on this belief that I am this body, just implicate us more and more in this material world, because it's wrong. Our understanding of what is going on, our understanding of the self, is wrong. We're not this body. That the constitutional nature of the jiva is an eternal servant of Krishna. And as long as we understand that, then we can build upon that and ultimately come to the realization of the practical, the vijnan. So that's jnana, it's just to have the knowledge there, is to say, yes, I'm not this body. We all accept that to some degree or another. That's the basis of Krishna conscious philosophy. The second chapter is dealing mostly with that point. The second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is dealing mostly with that point. Yet, that's just jnana, yet still we see that in our daily activities, if someone insults me, I respond. Why are you saying that to me? Who do you think you are? It's very rude to say things like that. You know. We see someone who has vijnana, as the Avanti Brahmana has, he doesn't respond to that. And it's interestingly enough, there's a statement the devotees were telling me a while ago in the Mahabharata. I have not read the statement myself, but they were telling me there's this statement there in the Mahabharata that if someone insults you or someone says something harsh to you and you don't respond, you reap their pious activities. They lose their pious activities and you get those pious activities. It's interesting because every time you have an interaction with someone, it's okay, there's the gross exchange, but there's also a subtle exchange. So even in the spiritual platform, just in ISKCON, for instance, if you want to chant the pranam mantra of a spiritual master, you need to get permission. There's a good reason for that also. There's the gross reason, but also there's subtle reasons. It's because as soon as you start chanting their pranam prayers, they have to take your karma. So it's just, taking a spiritual master is a serious thing, because once you have this relationship there, there's this exchange of karma. They're taking responsibility for you. And so responsibility means, just like parents with their children, the parents take the karma of the children when they're under five. The karma is there, there's an exchange of karma there. When you give somebody an instruction, if you're taking this role of being a teacher and you give somebody an instruction, you have to take karma. Especially if your instruction is misguiding them, you have to take karma. So we need to, and there's that point is given there in the fifth canto where Rishabhdev is saying that one should become a guru, one should not become a teacher, a parent, a worshipful demigod, a father, a friend, unless one is capable of delivering that person from the cycle of birth and death. So if we're instructing people and there's a material motive there, we're trying to exploit that person or misdirect them so that we can get some material benefit, then we're going to suffer from that. So we need to be very careful in our if we're taking on a role in the Krishna consciousness movement, we need to be very careful to assess our motives to make sure that our direction is very, very on the straight and narrow. We're actually trying to assist that person in their spiritual development. So this point, the story of the Avanti Brahman is very, very instructive in that we see how he's realized that, yes, I'm not this body. And not only is he not just gyan, it's actually vigyan, because now we see how he's acting upon that. And this is very important, we read the books, we hear philosophy, we listen to lectures, etc. like that. We get the gyan. But we have to take this next step so it becomes vigyan, so we actually live like that. And there's many things in this process which will help us to achieve that, such as sangha, as it points out in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, sadhusanga, sadhusanga, shava shastra koi, lava matra sadhusanga, sava siddhahoi. Through the association of sadhus, advanced devotees, it says sava siddhahoi, one can achieve all success. Sava siddhi. All perfections that one can achieve. And it says, lava matra. So there's matra. Is it matra or lava? I can't remember. And it means 1/11th of a second, one moment, very, very small period of time. If one can receive the mercy of a great, greatly advanced devotee, then one can actually achieve all success. So through the process of devotional service, also by regularly hearing and chanting, one's conscious and become purified. Actually, the whole process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. See, in devotional service, we follow different practices, or there's different stages of development in devotional service. And it begins with Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, then it goes to Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, then to Bhava Bhakti, then ultimately to Prema Bhakti. And this is a development through various stages of Shraddha, Anatta Nivritti, etc., to the point of Prema. And the purpose, the whole focus of Vaidhi, rules and regulations, is purification. And the more we're able to apply ourselves to the rules and regulations, ultimately, with the goal of our ultimate development of praying, not that we just get into the rules and regulations, there's niyamagraha, following rules and regulations only for the sake of rules and regulations, and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. As long as we follow the rules and regulations with this understanding that the goal is Krishna Prema, this will accelerate us on the process of devotional service. It will accelerate our purification so that we can come to the point of actually developing love of Krishna. And also the Vedic culture, the whole purpose of the Vedic culture is to nourish this love of Godhead. That's why, it's very important for us to give up our previous cultures. That's why Prabhupada, he said that this ISKCON society was actually meant for a cultural re-spiritualization of humanity at large. Cultural. He said cultural re-spiritualization. Didn't just say, you know, through chanting Hare Krishna. Obviously that's part of the process, and this is one of the most effective parts, probably the most effective part of the process. Yet still, there are many, many aspects that we need to develop. It needs to be a whole picture, not just we take one thing, oh, I'm just going to chant Hare Krishna and forget about all the other things. That's okay if you can just chant Hare Krishna. But can you just chant Hare Krishna? Don't eat, don't sleep, don't go to the bathroom, don't do anything. Just chant Hare Krishna. Thakur Haridas could do that. He just chanted Hare Krishna. He didn't do anything else. But if we can do that, then we can also make that claim. Well, I don't need to do these other things. I'll just chant Hare Krishna. But because we can't do these other things, because we can't just chant Hare Krishna, then therefore we must do these other things. We must work on our purification. We must work on developing our understanding of the philosophy. We must work on developing our personal purity. And Jiva Goswami, he makes the point in the Bhakti Sandarbha about this, you know, how deity worship is essential. This is because people's minds are disturbed by material nature. Therefore, they can't sit down and just chant Hare Krishna. Therefore, deity worship is essential. Therefore, all these various practices of devotional service are essential in order to help us move quickly through this Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and at least come to the point of Raganuga, if not Bhava and Prem. So, this story of the Avanti Brahmana is very helpful for us to understand the position we need to attain. That we're actually not affected by all these different influences of the material nature. Because that's all it is. It's just the interaction of the modes of material nature. And ultimately, it's how I identify with these things. That, you know, something, you know, someone throws a stone at me. How do I respond? I remember one time we were on Harinam in Perth, and there were some young lads, you know, they're definitely lads, there's no doubt of that, hiding in these trees, and they threw stones at the Harinam party, and one sort of bounced on the ground and hit me in the leg, and it really hurt. And then, you know, I just saw red, and I went in the bush, and I grabbed the guy, and I was going to drill him, you know, and the temple president came and said, no, don't do that. That's not... An interesting story, really interesting story I heard in Vyasakibhu told about Prabhupada. Prabhupada was travelling on a plane with a servant, don't remember who it was, and there was a group of probably footballers or something like that on the plane, and they were kind of being very rowdy and stuff like that, and they were smoking and drinking, and so he complained to the air hostess, you know, and so she went over and told them to be quiet. And so they were quiet for a little while, and as the flight was going on, they started up again, and they were smoking in the no-smoking section and drinking and carrying on like that. And he was, the servant was getting really, really agitated. And he was, you know, sort of sitting there fuming kind of thing, you know. And he was about to stand up and get the host to put his hand up for the button, and Prabhupada grabbed his hand and pulled his hand down. And he said, if we don't tolerate, we are no better than them. It's a very instructive story. We need to learn how to tolerate these things. You know, if we're disturbed, you know, if it's disturbing others, that's something else. But if we're disturbed by it, then we need to learn how to tolerate. And we see, you know, you look at Srila Prabhupada's life, how much he tolerated in order to push on Krishna consciousness. You know? I mean, for someone like Prabhupada, for a saintly person who's come from Vrindavan to come and live in the West, to come and live in a place like New York City, which is like the capital city of material sense enjoyment, for him to go there and to tolerate all that, you can understand a very, very elevated personality. So, this is the point of this story. It's showing us how we need to become situated above the concept of bodily consciousness. Above bodily consciousness, actually become situated in the self. And in that way, we can just focus exclusively on spiritual development and not be so concerned with the pushings of the body, the mind, the senses, etc. Very important point. Okay. The material body is dull matter and does not experience happiness, distress, or anything else. Because the spirit soul is completely transcendental, he should fix his consciousness on the transcendental Lord, who is beyond material happiness and distress. It is only when transcendental consciousness falsely identifies with dull matter that the living entity imagines he is enjoying and suffering in the material world. This illusory identification of consciousness with matter is called false ego and is the cause of material existence. Any comments or questions about that? Bhakti is, but what is your situation in relation to bhakti? Just because we're here, wearing dhoti, kurta, sari, whatever, having neck beads, tilak on the face, does that automatically mean we're situated in pure devotional service? No, we're situated in our bhakti is mixed. And to the degree that it's mixed, the degree will suffer. Simple. It's like, you know, why do we assume that because we've walked through the door of the temple, like ting, you know, instantly I'm no more karma? The moment you stop acting in the material world for your sense gratification, which is really all it is, you're just acting for I'm not trying to sort of be personal here, but the moment we stop acting for our sense gratification is the moment we come to this stage of pure bhakti. And you read in the Bhagavatam, it talks about, you know, how when persons achieve a particular stage of development, at that point they actually practice devotional service. Yeah. It's not just as soon as we walk through the temple and put through the temple door and put tilak on is pure devotional service. No, it's mixed, and because it's mixed, we get reactions. You're going to achieve this stage of unalloyed devotional service. Yeah. And of course, even on the stage of pure devotional service, there are gradations. Prabhupada would say pure, more pure, most pure. And we see, you know, even in the spiritual realm, there's gradations of devotional service. From, you know, the cowherd boys, the parents, sakis. So many gradations are there. There's variety. So give up all material desires. Then you can say you're on the stage of bhakti. And you're doing everything exclusively for Krishna. You have to look at what's called the udipan, or the stimulus. And even, you know, like, there's various stages within the realm of devotional service. And if we look at the descriptions that are given in the nectar of devotion, if your bhakti has anything, any stimulus other than the satisfaction of Krishna, other than the pleasure of Krishna, then we understand it's vaidhi. Following rules and regulations, instructions of guru, etc., etc., all this, we understand it's vaidhi. If the stimulation for that service is anything other than the satisfaction of Krishna, I just want to do it for Krishna. Krishna needs it, I'll do it. Just like there's an interesting story Prabhupada tells about when Krishna had a headache. And Narad Muni went to see Krishna, and Krishna had a headache, and he was very concerned. He said, "Oh, I have to do something to solve this problem. I mean, you know, how can I solve Krishna's headache? Remove Krishna's headache." And so he asked Krishna, and Krishna said, "Well, the only thing that's going to cure my headache is if I receive the dust of the lotus feet of my pure devotees upon my head." And of course, Narad Muni didn't think, well, maybe I'll give him the dust of my feet. You know, he's a greatly advanced devotee. He didn't think that. So he said, "Okay, I'll go get some dust." So he went around and he was asking all these devotees. I don't remember all the people he asked, but he asked many different devotees, and they're all, no. If Krishna takes my dust upon his head, this will be a great offense. I'll go to hell. And so they wouldn't do it. He went and saw the gopis in Vrindavan. Immediately they sat down and they started to scrape the dust off their feet. Didn't even think about it. The only thought in their mind was that Krishna had a headache. He was suffering, and they had to end his suffering. And Narad Muni said to them, he says, "But aren't you concerned that you go to hell because you put your dust of your feet on Krishna's head?" They said, that doesn't matter. Let us go to hell. Krishna's got a headache." That was their only concern. So that's the kind of bhakti we need to develop. Is it our only concern? Is it Krishna? Krishna's needs. That's elevated. That's a very, very elevated stage of bhakti. Something else? Mahatma Ji, a venerable father.
What is your realization? How to remember Krishna in him? Should we remember the deities or how to remember all the time? What is your realization?
It doesn't really matter how you achieve something. The point is to do it. Some people are inspired, just like in deity worship. Generally when I give guidance to temples on setting up standards of worship, I encourage them to keep the standard of worship as simple as possible so that devotees have the scope to engage their particular proclivities in the service of the deity. Like some people like to chant mantras. And they're really happy. You look at Dravida Prabhu. He lives in San Diego, and every week at the Sunday feast, when he's in town, he'll just sit down with a veena and he'll just chant mantras, and people come and join in with him. He chant Bhagavatam slokas or Gita slokas or Padyavali, this thing, that thing. So many different slokas he chants. And he loves chanting slokas. And so for him, I feel that he's perfecting himself through that process of devotional service. Other people like to cook. You look at Korma. He's dedicated his whole life in Krishna consciousness learning about cooking. So I feel that he's perfecting himself through cooking. Other people in deity worship, they like to do elaborate rituals or make really nice bhoga offerings for Krishna. They arrange the fruit very elaborately on the plate with designs, or they put, when we do the courses in Mayapur, we get devotees, some devotees will organize the flowers really nicely on the tray, and some devotees will do designs on the trays, for the aarti trays and stuff. You can go to Nakdwar, for instance, and there's a man there whose only service for the deities is he sits in this little room and he gets the aarti trays and all the different trays they offer to the deities, and he's got a piece of string and some paste made with rice flour and water, and he just gets the string and dips in the water. He makes these designs on the trays for the deities all day long. He loves it. So the thing is we have particular nature. We're all individuals, and we need to channel or dovetail that individuality in the service of Krishna to the point where it brings devotional ecstasy. So obviously there's certain things that we can't dovetail in that way, i.e. the regular principles. We follow the regular principles. We don't give up the regular principles. It's not like we can smoke marijuana and develop devotional ecstasy. But within the realms of the regular principles, there are so many things that a jiva can do. What is it that you want to do for Krishna? Just do that and become perfect. So that's the thing, is like, don't try to repress our actual nature. Repress our material nature, because that's an artificial imposition. That's just a result of conditioning. We need to repress that, but we actually need to, through the process of devotional service, bring out who we really are. Our actual nature as a servant of Krishna. And each servant of Krishna has a unique flavor, I guess. Every living entity is unique. There's no two living entities the same. Just like, you look at a material example, a snowflake. You'll never find two snowflakes the same, because it's the creation of Krishna. It's all unique. And also every jiva is unique. And it's explained in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita that just as every jiva is unique, then Krishna has a unique relationship with that person. So the idea then is to find out, to develop that uniqueness, to bring that, not to develop it because it's already there, but to bring that uniqueness out through your relationship with Krishna. So whatever it is that you're inspired, however it is you're inspired to serve Krishna, do that. And just keep doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. And as we serve Krishna more and more, we find that the coverings of the material energy are stripped away. Just like, you peel an onion and there's just like a layer after layer after layer, and finally you get to the onion. or the core of it, you know. So we just do that, you know, and as the material conditionings are stripped away, then eventually we come to the point of us and our relationship with Krishna, our unique relationship with Krishna. And that's why, you know, with an institution, we need to be careful not to try to shove every living entity into the same box, because it's not like that. Even though, of course, we understand, you know, the living entities are affected by material nature in basically the same way. That's the same, but the relationship, your relationship with Krishna is not the same as my relationship with Krishna, or anyone else's. We all have a unique relationship with Krishna. That's the greatness of Krishna. It is like, as many living entities as there are, he has that many unique relationships. So we can't all have, you know, just like I'll achieve happiness in one way with devotional service, you may not achieve in the same way. So you have to find your path in devotional service. Well, not your path. The path is the same. You know, the process of achieving is the same, but the relationship is going to be unique. So you have to find out what it is that inspires you. There's a saying that I learnt years ago, that a wise man will not lead you to his path or to his door of wisdom, but actually he will lead you to your own. So each person is going to have their own, you know, your own trigger point. You know, it's like, what is it that brought you to devotional service? There was an experience you had, which is unique to you, same as my experience was unique to me. There are many things that I, when I came to the temple, that I was exposed to, which I really, wow, this is great and stuff like that, which is probably similar for all of us. But there was a unique trigger that, you know, got me on the path. And it's unique for all of us. Okay, anything else? Well, Krishna says, time I am. Kalosmi Bhaktarashava. He says, time I am. I don't know, I didn't have much time to research this verse. I was told at 7 o'clock. I liked it, you know, because as I was mentioning to Rasanandini Maharaj before, there's so much in these Bhagavatam verses. And Mohanbhai the other day, I was giving a class from the song sung by Lord Shiva to the Prachetas, and he was addressing Krishna. Oh, sorry, he was offering his prayers to Krishna, and the words he was using in the verse were so significant that each word was saying so much. So, you know, you need time. You know, if you're going to give class on the Bhagavatam, unless you're a very realized person like Srila Prabhupada, you need time to, like, you know, research through it and see, like, what is he actually saying here? And, like, sometimes, you know, we look at the translations Prabhupada produces from certain verses. From one word, he'll give two or three sentences. Because that word, just like, you know, in this verse, he was addressing Lord Krishna's Padma something, I can't remember, Padma. Nama Pankajanavaya, that's what he's saying. It's the same as the verse by Queen Kunti, so it's Pankajanavaya. So he was referring, by using that word, he was referring to the fact that, you know, because he was born from Lord Brahma, who was born from the lotus, which came from the navel of Vishnu, he was connecting himself with Vishnu by using that word. And there was other words where he was bringing out other very important points. And Prabhupada, in his translation, was bringing out these things, even though it wasn't directly saying it in the verse. So, Bhagavatam verses are quite, you know, amazing. And when people make these claims, how the Bhagavatams, you know, well, it's a recent book, or it was written by someone called Vopadeva. I mean, who's Vopadeva anyhow, you know? Someone who studies the Bhagavatam can actually see that, no, this very, very deep, very profound book. And you know, the more we get into the Bhagavatam, the more we can actually see how many layers of explanation. You look at the way the acharyas, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and others have explained things in the Bhagavatam. It's just incredible. really incredible. Thank you very much. Grantara, Shima Bhagavatam, Ki Samaveta Bhakta Brindaki, Shri Prabhupada, Ki Jainita Gopre Manandi.